welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest tonight is the poet Caroline Whalen. Caroline Whalen received her MFA in poetry and nonfiction at Chatham University, where she won first finalist for best thesis. She was awarded an honorable mention in the Sacramento Poetry Center Prize for single poem, a partial scholarship to the Vermont Studio Center, and recently attended a Room of Her Own Foundation's retreat. Her second chapbook, Chain Down the Moon, and her full-length manuscript, Roadside Fires Burning, have been finalists in national competitions. Her first chapbook, The Glossary of Tanya Eby, was recently published by Finishing Line Press. She lives in Pittsburgh and works as a part-time legal secretary, writing instructor, and freelance writer. So, hi, Caroline.
Hello.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Do you want to start us off with some poems?
Sure. As it is a glossary, I'm going to read them in alphabetical order. Anchor windless. Is a gypsy in my father's dreams. Is a wildcat preying on my days. Cannot help me here, a mile above the sea's floor. Even if I let go, keep going until the chain goes taut. My bunker is too small to lie down. My body feels like beef jerky. I look at my no food, no water, this restless cat, and wonder if this stillness is from within or without. Everything in this loneliest point in the world has to come from within, yet everything feels without. Barometer. Pressure falls, and I cannot remember if this is good or bad, if it means storm or fresh winds, and the sky turns green, and I forget what dry feels like, what not scared is. There is a love letter tucked somewhere in this cabin, a goodbye letter. My heart drops. I cry into the ocean, but it doesn't rise. Dead reckoning. 2,800 miles, marking the time and the sun and the horizon. The time it takes for my retinas to swell against the reflection of light. I can reckon all I want as long as it's dead on. When we leave, we die a little. In motion, we leave little dead parts of ourselves everywhere we've been. Now at a standstill, mother dying in New York, life is moving faster than ever, that great shove from behind. Dinghy. The cat, my only friend, an animal who can't swim, stuck with me in the middle of the wide Sargasso Sea, El Pacifico, doldrums belt. The skipper who listens to my wails of helplessness, who stands at the bow and watches the volcanoes, the mountains, the scraping buildings of New York perch themselves on the horizon and grow. See also, lifeboat, saving grace, the smallest of wonders. Fog, like a wet wool blanket wrapped around me, the wool sweater my mother made me wear to remind her of her youth. It smells alive, but its stagnancy is smothering. There's nothing near but wild animals under my ship, knocking. The whales and dolphins sing and cackle, and I can only sit blindly, waiting for the clear. Good luck is in bits of shade of 100-degree days. I find it in strong breezes, the coming into awareness of myself, my brain turning on at those last moments when I will die if I don't understand well enough. Good luck is in the phosphorescence under ship at night, in my wake, the nightlight of my dreams. It is the good faith I keep in myself to stay alive, to cherish this life, to learn about my place as I haul through this world like a fishing net. Yank the halyard, hoist the sail, move onward. My upper body is the only part of me with muscle. My legs that used to pedal around the city like propellers are useless. I yank, hoist the halyards, pull the sail, and move the boom, keep my spirits from sinking. Headway, the opposite of sternway, can be seen as going forward, can be seen as kindly. Headway is the direction of my desires, always.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Caroline Whalen, reading from her chapbook, The Glossary of Tanya Eby. So, the collection is actually based on a historical person. Tanya Eby was a real person who, at the age of 18, I think, circumnavigated the globe by herself in a 26-foot sailboat. Can you tell us more about that? And
Well, she's still alive, and she was, she lived in New York and had kind of a troubled childhood. Her mom, as you'll learn from the book, wasn't all there psychologically and emotionally for the children. And Tanya ran away from home and kind of hung out at her dad's girlfriend's place, and who ended up being like quite a refuge for her. And the father, who was pretty well off financially, wanted her to do something with her life, but didn't want to stifle her. So when she was about 17, he was like, look, you need to do something. You can't be a bike messenger forever. So you can either go to college and try to turn your life around, or I have this better idea. We've been sailing like since you were kids. Why don't you go sailing around the world by yourself, and you can make money by writing articles for various sailing magazines? And that obviously sounded like a much better idea for somebody with Tanya's personality.
So what moved you to write these poems about that story?
I read her memoir, Maiden Voyage, and as I was reading it, I had a very visceral connection because, well, I didn't have the same upbringing. Like, psychologically, we had a lot in common, I feel, from what I read from it. And the feeling of wanderlust and of finding your place in the world, I think that it's pretty universal, but something that I really grasped onto, especially where I was in my life at the time. But there's also so many sailing terms, and so I read the book with a number of sailing encyclopedias on my lap. And so whenever there was a word that I didn't understand, I would look it up and I would write notes. And it came, the language connectivity was really interesting to me because words suddenly had so many more meanings. Like the word jib is something that we use with language, but it's also a sailing term. And throughout the book, there are so many things like that that was really fascinating to me.
One of your poems is called Jib, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you read us that one?
Sure. Jib, as in the cut of his, as in the way he spoke to me in French, in English, how the less I understood, the more I loved. My mother's strange accents in every language did not add up to any true history. The jib cutting down in front of this vessel, fronting the mast, clewing the sheet. I am a sailor now, and it's the only language I speak.
That final line of the poem seemed really important to the collection because it is a glossary. It is dealing with language and the idea of definition and that suggestion of her, this becoming her language. And there seems to be a real sense of assurance being built in the book.
Well, she was 18 when she started out, and obviously time passed, but there was a good amount of world experience that she acquired through that, and just coming of age in her own way and on her own terms. And I can't speak too much for her, but in my living vicariously, I guess, through her book, I felt like there was a lot of coming into oneself in it and really figuring out where one's own boundaries lie. And in this particular situation, there was an ability to cut off some of the personal that's necessary in order to really survive in the world.
Can you read us some more poems from that collection?
Home. A boat, a cramped cabin soaked in salt, a city far away full of belongings I don't remember how to need, a thousand smiles around the world, the sparking eyes of a seal. I hang my hat on the hopes of seeing land. Jettison. To throw overboard. I jettisoned myself from my father's house when I was 13. He jettisoned me from the world when I was 18. My mother jettisoned her truth, her past. I will jettison this weight of expectations. Luke once jettisoned my $400 and left me forever. I will jettison my heavy heart. Lost, somewhere in the world, my monitor wind vane is not registering. I feel abandoned. I'm off the coast of someplace, but every place looks the same. Varuna, my love, my home, my anxiety, Vedic god of the sky, the rain, the celestial ocean, of night, of La, the underworld. When I tell you she is the floating house at the carnival, you still don't understand. My home turns on its side. Everything I know is waterlogged. 26 feet of starboard love and hope, flashing planks against the sky. Uncleat, clip out, free oneself. Sometimes the only way out of a situation is to enter another. So I was a teenage hellcat. So I left New York to sail around the world. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger. I am still alive, and I have killed many demons inside. Boom, swing suddenly with wind. I scramble around this tiny boat to tie it down, to rearrange. There is a silence to all this noise, a quieting to this boom. I scream to humble it, but after, it is still there. Companionway on a boat alone is a joke. I walk through the hallway and there is a mirror of myself at the end. I am half the size I was when I left home and twice the friend to myself. And beyond that, a wall, an engine broken, the ocean deep and wallowing. Yank the halyard, hoist the sail, move onward. My upper body is the only part of me with muscle. My legs that used to pedal me around the city like propellers are useless. I yank, hoist the halyards, pull the sail down, move the boom, keep my spirits from sinking.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Caroline Whalen, reading from her chapbook, The Glossary of Tanya Eby. You were talking before about the personal experience that was involved in the book and involved in your writing the book and in the memoir. And I'm curious what it was like to take on another voice in your writing, to write in someone else's voice.
It was really liberating. I felt, I've been writing for a long time, since like sixth grade or so, and I'm still not that old, but that's a lot of poems about myself. And you can get really sick of yourself pretty easily when you're writing that much. And so it was nice to write somebody else's story and give somebody else a voice and live life sort of through somebody else's eyes. And I talked to her because I wanted to get her blessing since she is still alive. I didn't want to just publish a book sort of about her. And she read it and she wasn't really sure how to take it. So she had the grace to send it to a friend who knew poetry, and he kept it for a couple months and wrote her back this really lovely letter about how I captured her really well, and a lot of the things in the book are things that she had told him in private, which is really interesting that I was able to channel her in that way, but that there was also a lot of me in it, and that was really great because that, like, he got it. He was able to get that. And I'm not sure if other people who don't know either of us will pick that up where the line is. My mom got it, but she knows me. But after she sent me the letter, and then she wrote me back along with that letter saying, you know, I wasn't sure what I felt about this. I'm sorry it took me so long. And I thought during that time that she just accepted that the book was out there and felt weird about it and didn't want to contact me, which I was perfectly happy with. Not that I didn't want to talk to her, but what more can I expect from somebody? But she just wanted to make sure that she got a good reading out of it. So after digesting the letter that he had sent her, she reread it and then gained her own perspective and was like, I like it. It is about me. But I think he's right. It's also not about me. It's about you, and it's about your personal journey using me as a muse. And so, like, go ahead, have a ball. It's just really, really nice.
That's wonderful that you got her blessing for it. Something maybe related to voice, but also certainly to do with craft, that I noticed in the collection is a movement of voice that happens in the poems. You mentioned, and because the framework of the poems are all of these technical sailing terms. So there's this kind of technical language, but then you also have these moves to memory and these real emotional and associative moments. And I'm wondering how the writing of that was for you.
Well, I really imagined myself in a boat by myself in the middle of the ocean. And I have a tendency, even sitting in my room, to suddenly surround myself with memory and thoughts and regret and hopes. And they, I imagine, can become almost like friends, companions, comrades, after a certain point when you have nobody else to talk to. And she was going through some pretty hard things in her life when she left. And if I was in that situation, I imagine myself personally thinking about those and thinking about those people I left and thinking about the terms on which we left. And I imagine that it's hard to really separate yourself completely from that part of your life, even if you're making absolute steps to do so.
Another aspect that comes up in the poems pretty often is this blending of the environment, like the sea and the conditions and the interior life. There are some really interesting moments where the speaker, Tanya, blends with, for example, in Anchor Windless, she says, I wonder if this stillness is from within or from without. And in Barometer, I cry into the ocean, but it doesn't rise.
I'm not sure quite what to say about that, honestly. It's the way that it came out. Again, thinking about being in that experience, like I said, I had a pretty visceral relationship with the book, with her memoir, Maiden Voyage, when I read it, which I recommend everybody going out and reading. But being alone in a boat, there's such a feeling of smallness. And you, it's a feeling of smallness, I imagine, but also you are the only person alive, so you're the only person who could have impact on your life. And so things like crying into the ocean, your tears are all you have, but at the same time, they're making no impact on anything. And I imagine that being kind of a hard coming to terms with yourself and what you have and so much that you don't have at the same time.
Can you read us some more poems?
Admiralty Law. The law of the sea. Of me at 18 in the middle of the Pacific Ocean with no engine and no wind. My 19th birthday and a present from my mother, open in the middle of the ocean. A lock of her cancer-fallen hair. I am the smallest creature in the universe. The schooling anchovies have each other. Port. The left side of the ship, the southpaw of movement, the point of entry. The port is where I sit and watch the dolphins, is where I drink rum at some shanty bar in the Galapagos, thinking about the great ocean in front of me, the great past behind. Reach. Beam. The stretch of an arm out to someone, to feel the wind broadly as possible, to reach a bottle of Bailey's or a cat overboard. How a hand can change its angle and become the peak of a beam, a boundary. I want friendship. I want autonomy more. Sextant is a compass of the mind, barometer of light and time. Hold it against the horizon to see my place in the universe, where I am and where I am headed. Trades and the tricks of them. On track, our paths will not cross again. My sailboat docked alone, dinghy flipped. I will let these trade winds blow you away another week before I raise my sails to you. So for the sake of not reading the entire thing, I'm going to switch to a couple new poems that are from my other chapbook that I'm trying to place at the moment. This one is called Watching the Red-Tailed Hawk's Courtship Ritual. Oh, aerial diver, today you do not dance for me, but I watch anyway. Another plump bird perched to you in this heat wave. You've been flying large circles 20 minutes now, almost absurd in your ability to love, to want. You swoosh close to her while calling, "Creer!" And if you could, you would have smelled her soft feathers, the squirrel blood still warm. She could tilt her head back to invite you down from the sky to tie up your sails for a moment and define nest. But 20 minutes is a record for all of us now, and why stop? I am naked and drinking coffee and don't intend on dressing all day, maybe. In this secluded backyard, I feel exposed only to your wings and her sharp beak that could scoop me like a muskrat from my voyeurism. But Lady Hawk, we may be two big women daring a dance to continue, but the hot threat of summer has weighed me down so coolly, I can't recall ever feeling so high as you right now. Take your diver, prince of flight, and grasp talons. I wouldn't know what to do with him, and he would like nothing but dinner of my flesh. Strictly for eating. 1. At my birthday party, the guest-to-cake ratio was disastrous. Cakes for weeks, cakes given away as Mother's Day offerings to an unrelated grandmother, cakes thrown like softballs into the woods behind my house. It was my source of protein, sadly. All those eggs, all that wheat. 2. Everyone writes poems today about wind through wheat, but nothing but cigarette smoke is so nonchalant. I want to see wheat through processor, grain through teeth, even kill the image and admit. I pulse moments more like penguins during mating season, like cicadas and vibram, the weak lining between blood and coffee, both abuzz and beating towards each other. Wind through wheat could be flagellum of parasite, an idea mid-process, troop storming. 3. Once at a party, a woman brought 3 pastries she'd gathered on a cakewalk. She couldn't eat them, she'd said, because she was allergic to wheat. Doesn't sound like such a cakewalk to me, I said. The pun didn't translate. 4. What if we just reinvent the wheat plant? Reinvent wind? What if we said, he entered her like wind through wheat? The process of disintegration went unnoticed as wind, the wheat, until finally at the jaw, she became completely unhinged. Today, the rain hit the field so hard, the wheat could do nothing but receive it, and the wind, embarrassed in its own shock, blew the other way. Upon realizing your death, what finally moves you is a blister formed of your own heat and the swell of fat and bloat by your belly button. You get up like a revelation, but it's just your want for something cool, the sickness and feeling your body live and live and live. You write a list of things you used to love, try to remember. Hockey, dry cider, oppressively windy days. You walk towards the kitchen, leaning to the side as if the wind were forcing you lateral. There is no cider because there's no one to purchase it. You are an empty house. Martha's Vineyard in February. A ghost town. A ghost. What finally moves you may have taken a few hours, a lifetime. And now you sit and cool and shake on the front porch, watching for anything to pass. Your ears have stopped ringing. That mush of a molar no longer aches, but your hands. This is the pain of the dead. There is feeling without sensation, grasping without holding. This world is sad, precise. You pick at the paint on the railing and regret your calluses.
What's immediately striking to me about the newer poems that are not from the collection is this sense of real desire. I mean, you hear it in the subject matter of the Hawk poem, but you really, it seems like you really get at it with things like the sensual detail, like the smell of squirrel blood. Can you talk about that?
It's really interesting to me to have somebody else talk about my work, because I, especially with these newer poems, haven't really talked to them about talked about them with anybody, especially on like a critiquing level. And I've never even considered that about them. They're things that I wrote almost out of a need. The Upon Realizing Your Death was a poem that I wrote in response to quite a few friends of mine dying over the past few years and getting sick of writing elegies and really wanting, almost in the sense of Glossary of Tanya Eby and wanting to enter that life, wanting to accept my friend's death through experiencing it with them. And so that was my coming to terms with what it might be like after you die to like physically feel yourself be dead.
I think the poems have a real, they elicit an almost physical response in them. And part of that is from the rhythm. There are these really nice moments of pause. And I think some repetition, I heard live. Can you talk about that? And this sense of rhythm. I hear it too in the boating poems, mm-hmm. of these short phrases and then this expansion.
Well, poetry is music in a sense, and there's a rhythm to everything in life. You know, we have heartbeats, we have footsteps, we have knocking on doors, we have patterns of typing, we have patterns in personal behavior. And when I'm thinking about writing, I think that pattern just kind of comes out naturally in the music that is in the subjects that I'm writing about comes out. Some things in life can be kind of obsessive, and we dwell on them. And whether it's me dwelling on them or the character dwelling on them, I think that's something that just like comes out.
Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Renee.
The Poetry of Caroline Whalen. Thanks again for your reading.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30, for Prosody 90.5.